put it in perspective, it was 23 years ago. I was counting. When I couldn't go back to sleep in the morning.
I like it that she thinks about how long we've known each other when she's not sleeping.
Really?
Hi, I'm Kathy Bernard.
I'm Barbara Klein.
Thanks so much for joining us.
First, the creative couple who discovered a new and affordable way to retire and see the world.
Next, you've heard of learning abroad, but how about learning on the high seas?
Then one very cool senior shares how and why she became tech savvy.
Plus, the wonderful things that can happen when generation gaps are bridged. AARP's Mentor Up program.
And we'll shoot the breeze about the latest travel sites. What will they think of next?
To put it mildly, Lynn and Tim Martin grew tired of their conventional retirement. So they decided to sell their home in California, give away the furniture, stuff their remaining possessions into a 10 by 15 storage unit, and travel the world.
With just two suitcases, two computers, and each other, they set off on their global adventure and never look back. Lynn chronicled their life of wayfaring in her charming memoir, Home Sweet Anywhere. She joins us on the phone from New York City. How mundane, Lynn. Welcome to the program.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm very glad to be here with you. Thank you for having me. And I think New York is anything but mundane.
Exactly. Well, you're right. You're so right.
Well, it's not Kathmandu.
Exactly. Or Timbuktu,
no,
maybe. Right, right. We can spell it, right? Okay. So, Lynn, why? What possessed you to sell almost everything you own, including your home, and just travel the world?
Well, you know what? Today's life is so different from the when our parents were our ages. We're so healthy. We are really vibrant people, and there were so many places we wanted to see, and we just thought, gee whiz, if we just didn't have this overhead of this house and the worries and concerns that go along with owning a house, we could be free as a bird and go live almost anywhere. And so that's really what we've done. We're not living on the proceeds. We put that with our financial manager, and so we just take an allowance from what he can produce, and that's how we're living, and we're having a wonderful time.
Well, was it kind of an impulsive decision, or had you and Tim been, you know, pondering this for a long time?
Actually, you know what? We each thought about it separately, and neither one wanted to say it. Because we thought the other one would think their feelings were hurt because we weren't having a good time. But when I brought it up, he just started laughing like a lunatic, and he said, "I can't believe this because we're on the same page." He said, "I've been thinking the same thing." So we'd both been thinking it, but separately.
Oh gosh! So how old
wonderful.
Were you two when you decided to, you know, go off and start this great adventure?
I was almost 70.
Wow.
So, yeah, I know. It's kind
That's
of scary,
young.
Isn't it?
Oh, it's very young.
70 is the new 50.
I know it is. That's why we did it. We just said, gee whiz, we're both. Now I'm 73 and he's 68, and we've been on the road for 3 years and we're just doing fine.
Well, Lynn, did your family and friends think you guys had gone bonkers?
Of course.
Oh, good.
Yes. They were speechless. They really did. Well, think about it, you know. But they've gotten used to it, and they're happy for us, and they come to see us, which is just marvelous. So that, you know, it's all worked out fine.
Okay, so let's talk sort of brass tacks here. Did you guys make an itinerary before you left, or did you just go off to the next place when the mood strikes?
Well, we're too mature to be doing the as the mood strikes thing. We've done that from time to time, each of us in our lives, in our youth. But mature people, or at least we, like to kind of know where we're going to put our heads down. And besides, you can when you are looking for a place, we use homeaway.com all the time. And when you're looking for a place, you have more leeway the farther in advance. You can negotiate more easily with the owners of the apartments and stuff.
So how far ahead do you plan?
At least 6 months.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. For instance, Paris or places like that that are very, very popular, you almost have to plan a year in advance to get a good deal.
Exactly.
That's the trick.
Well, where did you first go?
First we went to Mexico, to San Miguel de Allende, which is one of our favorite places, and we spent about the first 3 months there sort of just getting used to what we were doing, and then we went on to Buenos Aires. And yeah, that was fun.
So
and
you're in Spanish-speaking countries. Was there a reason for that?
I'd always wanted to go to South America, and then we just thought that was a good thing to do. And we do have a little Spanish. So we did that first, and then our next big venture was a 7-month trip to Europe. Where
lovely.
We speak no languages.
Oh, my gosh.
So how long is a typical stay?
We try to stay not less than a month. That's about typical. Sometimes 3 months we stay. It just depends.
And I'm wondering, you know, when I go on vacation, although I don't go for a month or 3 months, but does it take you time to sort of settle into each new place? I mean, I can't sleep for 3 days when I first arrive somewhere new.
Well, you know what? We've been doing this so long. Last year when we arrived in Portugal, we were surprised because we've gotten it down to a fine art. We can do it in 24 hours. We're organized, you know, but we've done it a lot. So you just get a little routine going, you know. You learn. It's in my book. Not that I'm pushing the book, but it's in there about how we sort of progressed to learn how to do things in a certain order that served us best.
Well, I hear melatonin works wonders if you're dealing with time zones.
Yes, I think it does too.
Oh, yeah. Good.
And I would imagine you take certain things with you, so it's always like home. You know, you would take your alarm clock and you know, what sort of things do you take with us?
Oh, well, we do take an alarm clock. We really take actually very little. I take a knife sharpener.
Oh, that's
a little
good.
Portable knife sharpener, because there's never been a HomeAway rental or anybody else's rental that had a sharp knife.
Well, that means you must know how to cook, Lynn.
I do know how to cook.
Oh, gosh.
I thought that's why you travel, so you don't have to cook.
Actually, that's not true, because in our case, if we had been living on the road and eating in restaurants for 3 years straight, we'd be dead.
Yeah,
true. From the salt and the butter. So we eat at home a lot.
Yeah, or you'd be dead broke.
Yeah, we'd be broke and
dead.
The fun
you'd
of
be
travel,
dead twice.
Part of the fun is the shopping.
Oh, my gosh. So, Lynn, obviously you must not be a clothes horse, because we read that you only take one small suitcase. I mean, how do you fit all your shoes and clothes in one small suitcase? And that would be very difficult for Kathy.
It's very, very difficult. You just get used to looking like you're going to a funeral every day. We wear black all the time. It's just hilarious. But it all fits together. And you just have to kind of give up being fashionable and sort of do the practical stuff. So, and the rule is, if you buy something, you have to give something away.
Well, you know, all you have to do with that black is just put on a different color scarf.
That's it.
And you've changed your outfit.
I know.
But then you need the shoes to match the scarf one. I'm sorry.
Well, every pair of shoes I own is black, okay? So there you are.
See, I would just wear the black shirt inside out. I'd forget about the scarf, you know?
Yeah, I know.
And Lynn, do you do the rolling technique? Is that what saves room in your suitcase?
No, I don't. You know, we use those zipper things, the little zipper.
Yeah, take all the air out.
I like them, because if you are on the road, if you're moving around a bit, which we do sometimes between places, you know, it just keeps you so organized. You put all your underwear in one thing and it's all right there and it's handy. We find that a better thing for us. It's just personal, you know.
Our guest is Lynn Martin, who together with her husband, Tim, sold most of their possessions to travel the world. I'm Barbara Klein, and my co-host is Kathy Bernard. You can listen to the show anytime on the iHeartRadio app or at iHeartRadio.com. Now back to our conversation with Lynn Martin about dropping everything and hitting the road. So, Lynn, you touched upon your accommodations a little bit, but how do you find your short-term rentals?
Well, we use HomeAway.com and we use VRBO.com, and they're both international housing all over the world, obviously, and in all price ranges. So it makes it pretty easy to just get in there and look at what's available and find things that are in your price range. And we pay a lot of attention to the reviews that people put in the listing, and then we get in touch with the owner, usually directly, to sort of get a feel for the person in the place. And it's just sort of a little process that you do. We've had very, very good luck.
And what about transportation? How do you get from place to place?
I tell you what, we use repositioning cruises to get to Europe, and have for several years now, which are inexpensive, and they give you your food and your room and all those accommodations, and you arrive in Europe without any jet lag 2 weeks later. It's just marvelous.
So what do you mean the repositioning, when they're bringing the ship from stateside over?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And picking up new passengers?
Yeah. In the spring, they take them over, and then they do the Mediterranean cruises. And in the fall, they bring them back over here and do the, you know, Caribbean and stuff. So on that, when they're moving that equipment, that's a repositioning cruise, and they charge about half of what they do for a normal cruise.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
good,
it is great.
Good tip.
Yeah.
Well, Lynn, you've lived in so many fabulous places. Do you have a standout?
Oh, I am just hopelessly, helplessly in love with Paris. I can't tell you. We just adore it. It's really a lovely place to live. It's fun.
I can understand that. Have you gone back there?
Yes, and we're going again this summer.
Oh, fabulous, fabulous.
It's really a lovely place to be.
Well, Lynn, I'm sure many listeners are thinking, you know, this all sounds fabulous, and we're thinking the same thing, but how in the heck do you swing it financially? So how do you manage it?
Well, I will tell you, it's that when we decided that this is what we wanted to do, it really is simple arithmetic. We counted out everything that our house cost us, including everything, to live there every month. And then we went on the internet and found out how much it would cost us to do the kind of lifestyle that we are enjoying now. And the numbers were almost identical.
Wow.
So it's just math. We just gave up the one in order to do the other. So we're not living on our capital. We're just living on the interest from our investments and our Social Security.
And so can you travel indefinitely?
Yeah, as long as the wheels don't fall off, we're healthy. And that's the most important thing. I mean, someday, of course, it'll catch up with us, I'm sure, and we will settle down again. But I don't see that happening right away.
Okay, and so you're not going to worry about that, you know, funds are going to run out, but you'll have plenty to really kind of retire on.
Well, we have a wonderful financial advisor, and that is his brief. That is his job, and so that we will have enough to last us till we get out of here.
Great.
So that's the plan anyway. You know?
Now, Lynn, you kind of touched on the health issue, which thank goodness you guys are wonderfully healthy. But there's always that risk of getting sick abroad. And both Barbara and I have spent many years in third world countries.
Yeah.
And that is a scary thing. So do you have medical insurance that covers where you are, or, you know, how do you deal with that health care situation?
Yes, we do. We have Medicare, of course, in the United States, and our supplements, which we keep in force. And we see our doctors when we come home. We have maintained that whole, that wonderful, you know, backup of people we've been with for years. But we have international insurance that we buy. You can buy it just for the number of days that you're out of the country. And what it does is take care of some kind of really massive problem, if you have a problem, and that insurance will evacuate you and bring you home.
Oh, perfect. I was going to ask you about that Medivac.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's the most important thing to us, because we're not crazy. We know we are older people, and anything can happen. So as long as we that makes us feel sort of secure, so we know we can get home. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we know there's so many positives to this lifestyle, but there must be some challenges to having this kind of home-free lifestyle. I would imagine you miss your friends and family terribly, Lynn.
Oh, we do. Oh, terribly. There are moments when it's just terrible.
Yeah, so how do you cope with that?
Well, I'll tell you, Skype, FaceTime are the best things in the whole wide world for people like us, because we talk to our children. We talk to one of our girls almost every day. So from anywhere, and it's marvelous, and I saw dog tricks last night, you know. it's lovely. The FaceTime thing is really wonderful. You feel like you've had a visit, and we go home often too. We go home and rent an apartment near them and stay for a while, and it's so we get our fixes.
And it sounds like they visit you in some amazing places, which would be wonderful to have that opportunity.
Oh, yes. We have two grandchildren coming to Paris this summer, so we're
very
excited.
How lucky.
How
great would that be?
Yes.
So, Lynn, what is the best part of your lifestyle?
Oh, the people we meet. Absolutely. That's the very best thing. We have got friends everywhere now, and they're just love. I was just on the phone with a friend in Paris 5 minutes ago. It's just wonderful to meet people who have other cultures and other experiences and, you know, who understand the world and who are really out there. It's just really, that's the most rewarding part.
And are there, with all the lessons you've kind of learned along the way, any pearl of wisdom for someone who wants to embark on this type of adventure?
I don't think that this adventure, I should tell you, is for everybody. Not everybody needs to give up, you know, their whole life as they know it. But we are hoping that that people will at least explore some new and interesting things to do as they age. And our motto is postpone nothing.
Oh, love that. So, Lynn, we know you're going to Paris in the summer. What's after that?
Well, we're talking about Ecuador in the fall.
Oh, can I come too?
Oh, yes. I hear it's supposed to be terrific.
It's supposed to be fabulous.
Like to go check that out. And then Southeast Asia has its name all over it. So, we have not visited Canada. So that's on our list as well. So we have a lot of places we want to go.
Oh, that's super. Well, Lynn Martin, self-described senior gypsy and author of Home Sweet Anywhere. This has really been inspiring. We babes want to visit you and Tim when you're on the road in someplace fabulous.
Well, come and see us.
Okay.
We'd love to have you.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
The University of Virginia Semester at Sea program operates as a floating classroom that literally travels the world, giving its students, both undergrads and lifelong learners, firsthand global experiences.
Joining us to talk about this adventure of a lifetime is Karcher Pauly, a member of UVA's Semester at Sea staff, and Maddie Gable, a lifelong learning alum of the program. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you.
Well, Karcher, let me start with you. Can you briefly give us an overview of the program? I mean, what's the vision?
Sure. The vision for the Semester at Sea Lifelong Learning Program is that it provides adult learners the opportunity to join the Semester at Sea academic community. The lifelong learners, they participate and have a desire to study with the bright and enthusiastic undergrad students from around the world.
And where do you sail? Is sky's the limit? Is the world the limit? The world is your oyster?
Actually, summer voyage is going to Europe and Scandinavia. Our fall voyage actually circumnavigates the world.
Ooh.
And then our spring voyage is around the world.
What's the difference between circumnavigate and around the world?
The difference with that is just the locations of where the ship actually goes.
Oh, sounds fabulous. Well, can you tell us about this range of students? I mean, what are the ages on board?
Oh, sure. I mean, the ages, it's an undergrad program. The student population are all undergrads working towards their degree. I mean, basically, they're just your typical college students, so anywhere from, 18, 19 on up to, 22, some older students that, maybe returning back to school and coming on through, the community college route or returning learners. I mean, it's a wide range of ages for students.
And the lifelong learners, they can be any age? Are there a lot of boomers as these lifelong learners?
Oh, yes. That's the typical participant would definitely be of that age. Because they're retirees or professionals that are on leave or just, adventurous travelers.
Now, do lifelong learners typically take the courses?
They can. They can enroll in a course and they can audit a course. And the difference between that is when you're auditing it, you're not doing the work necessarily for the grade. So then when you would enroll in the course, you would actually be in the course, meaning you would be responsible for all the course materials, the coursework, the field labs that are associated with it. And at the end, you can actually get the credit from the University of Virginia for that course.
Now, give us an idea of the cost of these programs. Does it vary, if you're going to circumnavigate the world or if you're just going to, head on down to South America?
The only variance is the different cabin classes that we have that we offer for the lifelong learning program, and there are five different ones. And we have a very low end, which we call economy, that's, you know, right around the $10,000 mark, on up to, you know, our very nice and luxurious balcony suites that are, you know, $20,000 plus per person.
Does that include food?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah. So it's all your food. It actually includes your classes and all the programs that are on the ship that are dedicated to the lifelong learning program.
Wow. You know, we understand that you've had some very, very prominent students and guests on board, including Fidel Castro and even fashion icon Tory Burch. I mean, do they actually stay for the entire semester, or do they sort of hop on somewhere?
It depends on what they're joining for. Sometimes, yes, they do stay for the whole semester and enjoy, you know, every port and country with the students and really interact and get engulfed into the community. And then some come on, you know, maybe just for a couple of ports, and they want to discuss something, you know, that's pertinent to them and, you know, also, too, that would be helpful for the students and would have something to do with the curriculum.
Well, Karcher, just give us a little bit of an idea of the itinerary.
The average voyage, like, we'll just take the upcoming fall voyage, for instance. It's 94 days, so you would embark in Southampton. And then you would go to St. Petersburg, and you'd be in St. Petersburg, Russia, for 4 days. And also, too, when you're in the ports, we do have what we call field excursions that we offer as a program so that participants can take place in those as well. And they can also do independent travel. So it's completely up to, like, what your vision is and what you'd like to experience in the different ports.
We are speaking with Karcher Pauly and Maddie Gable about University of Virginia's Semester at Sea program and the opportunities for college kids and lifelong learners. Maddie, so let's switch gears a little bit. You are a lifelong learning alum of Semester at Sea. Why did you decide to join the program?
Because it was a fantastic opportunity to be with people who are adventurous, and I got to go around the world, 34,000 miles.
Wow. Well, were you retired at the time, or did you just decide to sort of take time off from life and do this, or what happened?
I'm a self-employed court reporter, and I took the almost 4 months off to go. It was more important to me to travel when I'm still able to hike and run and walk. So off I went.
Maddie, we want to know if it got a little wild on that boat. I mean,
yeah.
All those undergraduates. Did you get any sleep at night?
Were you partying with them?
Excuse me, ladies, but these are serious students.
Oh,
of
sure.
Course.
Yeah.
We were 18 once, too, Maddie.
Any fun activities?
No. No beer pong on the boat?
No, they were very good about controlling the students' liquor intake.
Oh, really?
While the lifelong learners could go up to the Glazer Lounge and sing while someone played the baby grand piano, could sing along to old standards, the students were pretty much studying.
Really?
So how did the students and the lifelong learners get along? I mean, did you make friends with the undergraduates, or did you sort of stick to your own little groups?
We not only made friends, we made families. I ended up with 8 female students in my family. And after every port, we met and we discussed our adventures. And we are still close. We still email.
You know, Maddie, I'm curious, how did you first hear about this program? How did you even know it existed?
Okay, I have subscribed for more than 30 years to a travel newsletter. And it actually came across the email. And I thought, why not? Why not? And I met 67 of the most, we still get together. We had a reunion last year in Oaxaca, Mexico, and this year 20 or 30 from my around the world voyage are going on the enrichment voyage in May and June.
Wow.
We like one another.
Well, we know that this is a very expensive undertaking. So did you save up for this for many years? How'd you swing it?
I took it out of my savings.
Wow.
I'm being self-employed. I had a self-employment pension fund, and I took it out of my savings.
Good for you.
Well, good for you.
Hey, ladies, 4 months almost without making your bed, without making your meals, with the most wonderful crew in the world who give you hugs coming and going, and the students, it just was one of the highlights of my adult life.
Oh, that's so great. Well, Maddie, how would you describe, I mean, besides that, that's great accolades, but how Semester at Sea on board that ship is really different from any other cruise experience. Have you ever been on another type of cruise before?
Oh, yes. I've been on about 7 luxury liners, Norwegian and Holland America. But this, I found my niche. This because you learn on this voyage, it, before every port, they give you an idea of the currency, of the customs. It's the pre-port lecture, and everyone goes to it, students and lifelong learners. If you're in Ghana, don't pet the dogs because they might have rabies.
Maddie, in the ports, did you have a chance to get to know any of the locals, like when you were stopped in Ghana?
Oh, yes, very much. We went to help Habitat with Humanity build a house. We went to hospitals to see the degree of pre- and postnatal care. I mean, it is a learning experience.
But it was a great experience. Well, would you sail all over again? Are you signed up to do so?
I am signed up to go on the May and June enrichment voyage. I just got back from the December-January enrichment voyage. Whenever I can afford it, I'm going to be there.
Karcher, let me switch gears to you. And we know that the University of Virginia owns this ship. How large is it?
And it can hold up to 750 passengers.
Since it is very costly, what does it range for undergrads? And is there any type of financial assistance?
Yes, we do offer many different financial aid plans for the undergrad program, yes.
So if a student has financial aid, they can use it for the semester at sea?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they can. We have some. We work closely with some schools, which are direct-billed schools. And then we also do have our own in-house financial aid, and we offer work study on the ship. So there's all the typical, you know, things for financial aid that a land university would offer, we have as well.
Karcher Pauly, University of Virginia Semester at Sea staffer, and Maddie Gable, a lifelong learning alum of the program. Thank you so much for sharing this great opportunity. And let me just say, we babes would be very happy to sign up and share everything we know about hosting a radio show. So keep that in mind, okay?
Oh, great. We will.
Fabulous. Thanks
okay,
so much.
Thanks, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, an inspiring cyber senior. We'll be right back. Support comes from Accent on Travel, Rehoboth Beach, with a Viking Rhine River cruise with us, the two Boomer Babes. For questions and reservations, 302-703-6154.
Come on, smile.
Oh, honey, he's still not smiling.
Maybe he's not a smiler.
Yeah, maybe he's just not a happy baby.
Maybe he's just being a boy.
Or maybe he's teething.
Maybe it's just a phase.
Maybe he has autism, and we can definitely do something to help.
Maybe is all you need to find out more about autism. No Big Joyful Smiles by 6 months is one early sign. Learn the others at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
There's a heartwarming feature documentary making its way around the country called Cyber Seniors. The film chronicles the extraordinary journey of a group of colorful senior citizens as they discover the world of the Internet through the guidance of their teenage mentors.
Joining us is Annette Rapoport, one of the seniors featured in the film. We're delighted to have her join us by phone from Canada. Welcome to the show, Annette.
Thank you so much.
Well, how did you get involved in the film?
Well, it was kind of an accident. There's lots of things happen. I found out when I was at my daughter-in-law's that of the director, who was a friend of her sister's, who lived in Vancouver, B.C., which is the other end of the continent, was doing a documentary and looking for people who didn't use the Internet. So that's how I found out about it. I made the phone call. I was interviewed. I was accepted. And it's been a ball.
Well, and we understand that you were the baby of the group.
I guess I am.
So if we may ask, to be so rude, how old were you when the filming began?
78.
Wow.
And 77 going on 78. So I'm on to my 80th birthday, and I cannot believe that number, but it's coming up.
Oh, you sound like you're 35.
That's right.
Right. Well, Annette, just as a bit of background, did you work outside of the home before you retired?
I was married in 1954, and I quit school. I was in physical and occupational therapy when I met my husband. He was 26. I was not 20 yet. Got some kind of a menial job and worked for a number of years until I became a mom, and then I was a stay-at-home mom. I used to do some volunteer work, a little bit of market research stuff, but really not a career-type job.
Well, what were your reasons for wanting to get online?
Mainly other people. It really had nothing to do with me. I was being called, I called myself a Luddite, but my friends complained, my family complained, why aren't you involved in the 20th century or so? You know everything about everything. I used to be called an internet, if you can believe it, because I have contacts with a lot of people. And I do, if I need some information, I pick up the telephone and get the information.
Oh, how old-fashioned, Annette, after
how
all, picking up the telephone.
I like it the best.
How refreshing.
Now, imagine this conversation on the internet. Could we be having as much fun?
No, of course
no,
not.
No, you wouldn't be hearing the inflections of the voices. You wouldn't hear the smiles. You have to imagine all that in your own head. So I'm still not 100% convinced. However, I do use it. I find it very useful if I want to send out the same message to a lot of people. You know, so just press the contacts and the thing. That's very useful.
Oh, you sound so professional.
Oh, very.
Well, Annette, rumor has it that one of the first things you explored online was Facebook. So
I'm on Facebook.
Okay, uh-huh. So why did you want to learn about Facebook?
I don't know. It's there.
I'm oh, well, good for you.
I'm on Twitter. I don't know why. I have something else to – I have another button to press when I open the iPad. By the way, I really find the iPad a lot easier than the computer was.
And why is that?
Not using the mouse. It's much, much simpler.
Well, Annette, another rumor is that we hear you even tried out online dating.
Well, I think I was coerced into that. However, I went on J-Date.
And how did that go?
I don't think I ever joined. I think it was just a viewing. And the thing went by too fast. You know, my mentor, he was an 18-year-old. They don't have the patience to sit and look. They're used to scrolling, right? Fast, 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 fast. So these faces came on. I kind of got a glimpse, but, you know, it takes me a little longer to digest things.
So no dates came of it?
No, nobody ever. I think I had two viewings or something, but I never joined. I think you have to join. Nothing ever came of it. However, I've been on TV. I'm on the radio. I don't hear. My phone's still not ringing, and my email isn't clinging. So I don't think that's in the cards.
Well, Annette, has getting online changed your life at all? Has it made it any easier to communicate maybe with your grandchildren or your children?
I suppose for them. Like my son and daughter-in-law were away on a trip to Turkey. They were on a catamaran. They sent back pictures. That was great. You know, I saw them 2 weeks ahead of time before they came home. When I can't reach somebody or something, then I'll email them. I'm still, you know, if something doesn't go right, if I hit the wrong, like I was sending emails and I was pressing forward instead of send, so they didn't get there, and I really didn't realize what was wrong. Then I asked somebody, so now I know you have to say send. But you have to remember all these, you know, forward makes sense to me, you know, if I want to forward the letter, right?
Right.
So, but that was wrong. Anyways, in time it will happen. So far I'm still being coached. I enjoy that hour and a half with my coach. I really do, because I don't get frustrated. If I'm not doing something right, she just, you know, sticks her finger there and gets the right thing out. But I find buttons very frustrating. I'm of that age, I guess. And my fingers also don't work that beautifully. I tend to press it too hard or in the wrong place or, you know, the mind isn't quite there.
You have those challenges. Was there a special aspect, or what was the best aspect of learning how these new technologies work?
Well, for me, it's opened up a whole new world of people. And, you know, I get phone calls from, I got a phone call yesterday from Florida from a friend of mine. Oh, she said, I put on, I opened up my my iPad, and there you popped right out at me, and I didn't even know it was on. They had, I learned how to do a selfie a number of weeks ago. So they decided that they're going to have the idea of a shelfie would be a good idea.
Well, that's
and
pretty
so
good.
They came and they filled. I do have one interesting shelf of pillage cups I've collected when I travel. And so that was fun. And then I got this phone call from her yesterday. Oh, you popped out at me and with your shelfie, with your pillage cups. So, you know, that. But that was on a phone call.
Well, Annette Rappaport, one of the seniors featured in the new documentary, Cyber Seniors. It's been a treat talking with you. Thanks so much for shooting the breeze with the babes.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. I hope it's helpful to some other seniors.
During our last segment, Annette Rappaport, an 80-year-old senior featured in the documentary film Cyber Seniors, shared what her experience was like getting up to speed with new technologies.
Now we have the pleasure of speaking with the film's producer, Brenda Rusnak, director Saffron Cassidy, and Camille Wilson with AARP's Foundation. These ladies had the genius idea of pairing teenage teachers with senior students to learn all about technology. We're delighted to have you ladies join us in the studio. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Well, Saffron, we understand that this film was your brainchild. So how did you get the idea for Cyber Seniors?
Well, when my two younger sisters were in high school, they started a program called Cyber Seniors. They were inspired by our grandparents who had just learned how to get online, and it totally changed our relationship with them. So they wanted to help other seniors do the same. And I'm a filmmaker, so when they started this program, immediately the light bulb went off that, you know, this would be such a great film with touching moments as well as humorous moments that can inspire even more seniors to get into this.
It really is just a genius, brilliant idea. But how did you actually pick those very colorful seniors that you portray in the documentary?
For filming, we approached several retirement residences in the Toronto area where we filmed. We got into two retirement residences, and we signed up about 40 senior citizens who wanted to learn. And out of those 40, we narrowed it down to six fantastic characters, and we were just lucky with who we came across. They kind of just fell into our lap.
It was perfect casting, let me just say that, in their real life.
And what's the age range?
Our youngest senior, Annette, who you spoke to, was 77 at the time of filming, and our oldest character was 93. But we met other seniors. We had one senior that we met that was 106 years old, and he didn't make it into the film because he actually didn't need lessons. He was completely independent on his computer. We would say, oh, we'll give you a call to set up a meeting, and he said, no, don't call me. Email me. It's easier.
Amazing.
And 106. Yeah. Oh, that's so great. Well, how did you go about recruiting or finding the teenage mentors?
Well, when my sisters began the program, it was just them and their friends. So a few of the young mentors in the program had just heard about it through their schools. For the purpose of the film, we put out an ad online to find kids that weren't only interested in teaching, they had to be comfortable on camera as well. So we had to go out and seek them in a different way. But through the process of this film, we've developed resources and we've been working with AARP to get other interested students involved and help them find places where they can volunteer.
Well, Camille, let me follow up with that. Tell us what AARP Mentor Up program is and about the collaboration with the film.
Absolutely. So Mentor Up is an AARP Foundation program, as you mentioned, and we launched last September. And it really is all about inspiring and encouraging young people to engage in service and volunteerism on behalf of older adult populations. And so we actually met Brenda and some members of her team at AARP's member event in Atlanta last October. And it really just, we started talking and she started sharing about Cyber Seniors. And it really was kind of the epitome of what we were trying to do with Mentor Up. Mentor Up is not exclusively about technology literacy, but obviously when you're thinking about what skills and knowledge that young people have that are really transferable and useful to older populations, technology is just one of those things, right? We know young people, they use it in every aspect of their lives on a daily basis. Some of them are born with them as an extra appendage. So it was just this natural, very intuitive opportunity to really create these opportunities where they could share their insights and learnings and the benefits of technology, while really what's turned out to be as a byproduct fostering these really meaningful intergenerational relationships.
Which is wonderful.
It's beautiful.
So how do you get your teenage mentors then?
We actually right now are primarily working through organizations that represent young people who focus on civic engagement and leadership skills. So we're working with organizations like the National 4-H Council, DoSomething.org, which is a web-based organization that focuses on digital-based service activities, the Intergenerational Center at Temple University, and a couple of other organizations that are really rooted and committed to intergenerational programming as a means of what they do.
You mentioned about the intergenerational relationships, and I think that is so heartwarming. And how wonderful for these seniors who maybe perhaps are alone or not, but yet to really have that communication with a younger generation. Can you kind of tell us about a couple of those relationships? I mean, was it tough going at first, or did they really click and get along? Have they sort of become kind of embracing each other and together for holidays? I mean, what's going on?
Yeah, I think for a lot of the younger people that were involved in our film, at least, I think, you know, it's not a demographic that they're used to working with. So I think a lot of them were a bit nervous about, you know, what am I going to talk to these people about? But they quickly found that they had a lot to talk about and there was a lot to learn from these older people. One of our students, Henry, was teaching a 90-year-old man named Ellard. And it was just so amazing to see, you know, this deep respect that he had for Ellard. Ellard would, you know, take out souvenirs from when he was fighting in World War II. And to Henry, this was just, you know, so amazing. The best history lesson you can get. Then they'd go on the computer and look at old fighter jets. So through teaching him about the computer, Ellard was also teaching him about his own life.
We're speaking with Brenda Rusnak and Saffron Cassidy, the producer and director of a charming documentary called Cyber Seniors, which chronicles a group of seniors and their teenage mentors who come together to bridge the technology gap. Also in our studio is Camille Wilson from AARP, who is helping to promote the film to encourage seniors to get online. Well, Brenda, let me ask you, how tech-savvy were these seniors that were featured in the film to begin with before they got the lessons from their mentors?
The majority of them were not tech-savvy at all. I mean, the lessons literally started with, this is how you turn on a computer. And, you know, we shot 120 hours of footage, and so there was many, many beginner lessons in there that never made it into the film. But one of the things that really struck me during the editing process, of course, Saffron was largely responsible for editing, but I would pop my head in every once in a while. And the footage that I was seeing was just this discrepancy between the terminology that the students were using and the seniors not having a clue what that terminology meant. And it really struck me because I'm in between, you know, so I have a little bit of that technology, but for me to stand back and to see, it was like they were speaking a foreign language. And it was literally like bringing two people together that spoke a different language.
Well, wasn't Facebook one of the examples? Didn't one of the seniors think that it was a book?
There was a lot of examples with Facebook. It was Facebook.
Yeah.
The opening scene, one of the seniors asked the student, what is Facebook? There was no editing in there. And when you watch that explanation, you realize the growth that the students took as well during this film. And that's what's so magical about the film is that you see this growth with the seniors that they move through and they learn, but the students learn as well. And, you know, when I watch the film, I see the seniors getting younger as the film progresses. And I see the students learning how to teach and how to relate to people.
What a great opportunity for these young people to really learn one-on-one communication skills.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Saffron, let me ask you, what were some of the reasons that these seniors wanted to get online? What were they going to use it for?
A lot of the seniors in our film, right off the bat, they said their reason for wanting to get online is, I see my kids on Facebook, I see my grandkids on Facebook, and I want to be on Facebook.
I want to know what's going on.
Exactly. It's like they were being left out of this little club, and they wanted ways to communicate. A lot of them have relatives that live far away. You know, families aren't living in the same little town anymore. Families are moving halfway across the world. A lot of them had relatives in Australia, and they would say, you know, my daughter and grandkids really want to see me on Skype. They want to see that I'm doing well and want to be able to chat and, you know, communicate that way. So that was their main reason, connecting with family and the family that wanted them to come out and be on the internet.
That's so right. Now, we also understand that the seniors' exploration of cyberspace really took it to a whole new level when one of the seniors, is it Shura, decided to create a YouTube cooking video. You've got to tell us about this.
Well, Ashura got really into watching YouTube cooking tutorials. It was her favorite thing. She, you know, she loved to cook, so she loved watching these cooking videos. And she told us one day that she wanted to make her own, and she wanted to make us grilled cheese and corn on the cob. So we got her all the ingredients. We set up the camera. We told her to just introduce herself. Hello, YouTube. My name is Ashura. And then she started cooking, and we did not expect her to cook the way that she did. She busted out an iron to make the grilled cheese. She was putting the corn in a coffee pot, and we were just howling from behind the camera. And when we posted it on YouTube, her family and friends obviously loved it. Her family thought it was so funny and so cool that grandma's on YouTube. But other people started taking notice, and the other seniors in the program started going, that seems like fun. I want to make a video too. I have something that I could teach. So that was when the YouTube video competition was born. It was these students are teaching these older people how to use the internet, but the older people have so much to teach the younger people, and they really should have more of a presence online. They should be contributing more to online content.
So which YouTube had the most views?
To date, the video with the most views is our rapping granny, Marion. She said she loves to sing and her young mentor loves to rap. So they did a combo video where Marion sings, but then she does a little bit of a rap at the end. And that video, I think, has almost 30,000 views.
Wow. We think both of those ladies should get their own show. They were unbelievable. Talk about personalities. Have you noticed another one of the seniors, Barbara, has short-term memory issues, which I think would make it really difficult to learn and retain new skills. So how did she fare during the computer lessons?
Well, we found even when seniors, you know, do have memory issues that might prevent them from ever becoming independent online, it's still a program that benefits them. Even if every single lesson she goes, I would love to see YouTube, I've never heard of that. It's like, no, we taught you last time. But she's still getting the same effect of it every single time, hearing her favorite song. So it's still something that benefits her, having somebody come in and be able to guide her through that each week.
Right, and she can probably also learn to play like memory games to, you know, maybe wait off, you know, a little bit of the dementia.
Exactly.
Camille, real quickly, if someone wants to be part of the Mentor Up program, either learn computer skills or become a teenage mentor, who should they contact?
They're welcome to contact me, and I'm glad to share my email. It's kawilson@aarp.org. But they can also just start by checking out our website at www.mentorup.org. They can learn more about the program, opportunities to get involved, and we also have a volunteer locator where they can type in their zip code and find out what opportunities are available for them to, again, engage in youth-led service opportunities that benefit older adults.
Well, we're going to help spread the word as best we can. Brenda Resnick and Saffron Cassaday, the producer and director of the documentary Cyber Seniors, and Camille Wilson, who heads up AARP's Mentor Up program, thanks so much for sharing this wonderful film with the two Boomer Babes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Summer is in full swing, which means travel season is upon us. And there's nothing like an adventure to a new city or new country to get outside of our comfort zone and really shake things up.
For those looking to save money and enjoy a more authentic travel experience, there's some new travel sites that make touring a new city a little friendlier. Sarah Knipe, a social media strategist and communications consultant, joins us to talk about some of these new travel sites. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, Kathy and Barb.
So, Sarah, let's talk about a few of the more out-of-the-box sites for these travelers. First is EasyNest. What is that?
So EasyNest is a site for solo travelers who are looking to save money while traveling. Basically, travelers use the site to share their rooms with other travelers so they can have access to better hotels, better locations, and make new friends.
Okay. But are the potential roommates vetted in any way, or does some stranger just show up in your hotel room saying, here I am?
That could be a little scary.
I want the left side of the bed.
So you do have to create a profile. How it works is you sign up and you create a profile, and they do encourage you to input your social networks like Facebook and Twitter and write a description about yourself. And the more information you complete, the more likely hosts are to accept you to share, you know, your reservation with them. So they do have that as a safety net, but there's not a whole lot more that screens. So you have to use your own judgment with that.
Sarah, is there any recourse if the potential roommate sort of backs out and refuses to pay their half of the room after you spend this wonderful night with them?
That's a great question. And honestly, there is not anything legally binding with us. Basically, the host is ultimately responsible for the cost of the room, and they enter the contract with that potential roommate in good faith.
Oh, the good faith part.
I think this sounds a little shaky. I'm going to stay away from that one. Okay, now there's another really cool site called tint.travel that'll help travelers find someone to host them in a foreign city or show them around or even share dinner. So how does that work?
It's an application that helps travelers and locals meet all around the world. And you sign up via your Facebook account and you fill out a travel profile of what you're looking. And you can also have the option to be a host. And then you'd select what you'd like to offer guests, or if you're a guest, what you're looking for. So sightseeing, eating, a place for a drink, or a place to sleep. And it's a great option for someone, a traveler who wants to sort of step off the tourist track and go into the local culture, or a local person who wants to travel while staying at home.
Hmm. Does it take some of the worry out of your host maybe being Jack the Ripper? I mean, how do you kind of screen that?
So once again, this is based around Facebook. So the host or traveler is able to view the information on that person via their Facebook profile.
So you would know a friend of a friend of a friend. Somehow you'd be linked, you're saying?
Exactly, yes.
Okay, but then let me ask you this. Would all those people know where you are and that you're traveling then?
That's more on the traveler, I think, to let other people know where they're going. But, yes, you communicate through the website.
Okay. Well, you know, we thought this next one was absolutely ingenious. Voulez-vous Diner, I'm hoping I'm not just butchering that, which originated in Paris. So how does that site work?
This is such a neat website. So Voulez-vous Diner is a site where people can unleash their cooking talents and turn their private dinners into a unique culinary and cultural experience basically anywhere in the world. So let's say, Kathy or Barb, that you wanted to make dinner and wow everyone with your amazing cooking skills. What you guys would do, you'd set up a dinner as a host on the site, and then you'd set the price of the dinner, post it, and other people could register to attend your delicious meal.
Wow. But is there a way to check out the host and maybe their cooking skills, you know, before making the reservations?
Yes. Guests who are looking for a personal dining experience can peruse the website by location, and then they can see the ratings given to the host, and the evaluations are provided by the guests, and they rate on ambiance, food, and place.
Okay, but what if it's the first time up and there's no ratings?
Then you eat at your own risk.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Hmm. Yeah.
I'd want to personally know about my guests that were coming to my house for dinner.
Or make sure your insurance is up to date in case you get food poisoning, maybe.
Oh, my gosh, exactly.
Your Medivac insurance.
Be sure to have that balloon policy or whatever it is.
Sarah, does it cost to use any of these sites?
There's not a cost to use the site. There is a cost. There's a 3% fee charged for each confirmed dinner. And then they also have a reservation fee that is, I guess, totaled by the host, and that's can be up to 20%. So it's not an exact fee, but the host sets the amount of the dinner, and that's basically the fee you're paying.
Well, Sarah Shepherd-Knight, social media guru, it's always fun to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining the Two Boomer Babes.
Thank you both.
And now it's time for us babes to give credit where credit is due.
Audio and technical guru Julio Gonzalez, who magically pulls it all together.
Webmaster wizard Gail Jane, who makes TwoBoomerBabes.com a fab place to visit.
Founding members of the Chicago chapter of the Two Boomer Babes Supper Club, Mike and Larry Israel, for your unfailing love and support.
Our husbands, daughters, family, and friends, even with smirks and eye rolls, who encourage us all the way.
And give us great material, often without knowing it.
Our moms and upstairs directors, Jane and Sally, who are cheering us on from their bridge game in the sky.
Our home away from home, Delmarva Public Radio. And to you, our listeners, for joining us each week and spurring us on.
Two Boomer Babes is a production of Two Boomer Babes Media in collaboration with Zymer Communications.
Who might you save?
Your mother, your father, your husband, uncle, aunt, son.
Learn FAST, F-A-S-T, the sudden signs of a stroke, and you could save...
Your friend, your best friend, teacher, boss, coach.
F, face drooping, A, arm weakness, F, speech difficulty, T, time to call 911, F-A-S-T, face, arm, speech, time. That's F, face drooping, A, arm weakness, S, speech difficulty. T, time to call 911. The sooner they get to the hospital, the sooner they'll get treatment. And that can make a remarkable difference in the recovery of
your neighbor, the waiter, a fellow shopper, a total stranger, grandmother, grandfather.
So learn FAST, the sudden signs of a stroke, then pass it on, because you never know who might save you.
Your wife, your colleague, teammate, mother.
Spot a stroke fast. Visit StrokeAssociation.org. Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.